The title of the sermon last week was The Sabbath Was Made for Man, so that was part one, and today will be part two. And that's the point. The Sabbath was made for man. It was made for you and me, and God in His wisdom set that time aside for us. And we'll look at some reasons why it's obvious that God made the Sabbath for you and me. So we're going to continue that subject, and but I'd first like to recap some of the main points that we covered in the first sermon. And we learned that although the Sabbath is the fourth commandment, it follows naturally from the first three. So for you to put God first, for you to honor God's name, for you to avoid idolatry, all of that is essential to keeping the Sabbath and vice versa. So all those things go together. The commandments, as you can see, as you think about them, are interrelated. The Sabbath was made for man by your Creator and mine. And it was created for the benefit of man. God, knowing man and creating him, said, for man to stay on course and to end up and be a part of my family, this setting aside of this time is essential for human beings to stay on track and end up being a part of God's family. The Sabbath is a memorial to the great Creator God. So many of us take time out and we go visit various memorials to different individuals and different occasions, and this is the most special memorial that's ever been established, and that is a memorial to the great God. And so as we keep this memorial each week that God has set aside, it reminds us of our Creator. The Sabbath was established by the Creator on the seventh day. So you had 6 days, and then on the seventh day, God established the Sabbath, as God tells us in Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. God created the Sabbath, or established the Sabbath, by resting. And the establishment of the Sabbath day tells us that God has completed His physical creation. He finished that in 6 days. And then came the seventh day, and God continued His creative work by establishing the Sabbath. And what He's telling us by that is that we're complete physically, but we are incomplete spiritually. And it is a weekly reminder that we need to be completed spiritually, which is what God's work is all about. So as we keep the Sabbath, we keep that in mind. Now, let's go to begin today. As you think about the Sabbath, God did not bless and sanctify the other 6 days of the week. The other 6 days of the week were important as God went about His creation, but He did not bless and sanctify them. The only day that He blessed and sanctified was the Sabbath. And so what does it mean when it says that God blessed and sanctified the seventh day? We get some insight into that by turning to Exodus chapter 20 and looking at verse 8. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 8, it speaks of the Sabbath day. This is where God gave His instruction and that fourth commandment. And He says in verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And that word in chapter 20, verse 8, which is translated holy, is the same, derived from the same root as the word sanctified in Genesis chapter 2, verse 3. It tells us that He sanctified it. It's basically the same word. The only difference is a matter of the tense. But they're both technically, you know, in, for the most part, the same word and point to the same thing. God sanctified the day in Genesis, and He made the day holy, as we see in Exodus chapter 20. So, how does a day become holy? How does a day become holy? He made no other time holy than the Sabbaths. Not only the weekly Sabbath, but the annual Sabbaths are all holy. And there's a reason that they're holy. And we've been told in the past that as human beings, because God's Spirit dwells in us, we're holy, and we can therefore make a day holy. Sorry, we can't make anything holy. God is the only being in the universe that can make a day or any other anything else holy. And it takes God to make it holy. So any other day than what God has made holy, even though billions of people may observe that particular day and tell you it's holy, they can't do that. It's impossible. Only God can make time holy. So what this means is that the Sabbath is worthy of respect, of deference, of devotion that you're going to give to that day as opposed to other periods of time. It's been set aside for sacred use because it derived directly from God. Now, because of the assignment of the word holy to the Sabbath, it changes the day into something special. It is a special day, unlike any of the other days of the week. And the general thrust of the word holy means to cut. It means to cut. And so, okay, to cut, so how does that apply to the Sabbath? It means to cut out. It means to separate from. So the Sabbath has been cut out of the seven-day cycle. It is a unique day that God has cut out for his purpose. It is a unique day that God has separated from the rest of the day, days, and he wants us to remember that it's separate and it's different. It has been cut out apart from the other days or sanctified. And that all so is something that has taken place with all of us as we've been called out of the world and we've received God's Spirit. We've been sanctified. And it is through God calling us and through God giving us his Spirit. His Spirit begins in to dwell in us, and that makes us holy people. So it's a holy time, and it is different. You have the 6 days in which we're to do all of our work. We're to do all of the things that we like to do. And then when the Sabbath comes, it's different. And we're to look at it differently and not to treat it in a way that is common. We pursue sports, or we pursue fun activities. We pursue those things during the 6 days of the week. We do our work during those 6 days, and we don't work on the Sabbath day. The Sabbath is special. Now, the question is, just to give you an idea of how something is set aside as holy, let's go to Exodus chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. Exodus chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. So this is the story of Moses walking through the desert. And Moses was a shepherd who worked for his father, Jethro. He had married Jethro's daughter, and one of his assignments was to watch Jethro's flock. So he's out in the desert watching the sheep, and it says in Exodus chapter 3, verse 2, "And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame." And if you look in my Bible, angel is capitalized, which means it's a reference to God. This isn't an angel that is appearing to Moses, because an angel can't make anything holy. Only God can. So this has to be God, as we'll see. "So the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of the bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed." So he's out there with the sheep, and he notices that there's this flaming bush that's pretty good sized, and he thinks that's not a usual thing you see in the desert. And the bush is not being consumed. Verse 3, "Then Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn." I think all of us would go over and look too, wouldn't we? Wow, that's unusual. A bush is burning. I wonder why that is. And we would go over and check it out. So Moses does that. Verse 4, "So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses, and he said, Here I am. Then he said, Do not draw near this place." Don't draw near this place. And why is that? Why not? "Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground." So the place where you stand is holy ground. And it wasn't holy until God appeared there. As you look at everything else around there, this wide open desert location, it's not holy, but this area where God is at is holy, and God says, take your shoes off take them off, be respectful, and realize that you are in the presence of God. And that ground where God appeared to Moses was holy ground. God made it holy. And it was holy as long as God was there, and once God left, it was just desert again. It wasn't anything special after that. But God's presence is what made that particular spot holy. So it became holy by means of spiritual action. And how did Moses know that it was holy? He didn't know it was holy. All he saw was a burning bush. He had no idea that it was holy because he was coming up to that bush and he was not worried. He wasn't concerned. When God said, hold it, don't come any closer, take your shoes off, be respectful, because this is holy ground. And the only way that he knew it was holy ground was because God told him. Because God told him, this is holy. It's just like for us. How would we ever discern between the first day and the seventh day if God had not given us an indication of what day was holy? God told us. We never would have known otherwise. Most of us didn't know anything about the Sabbath or why that was significant in our lives in the past. And then God pointed out to us, God got our attention and said, this day is holy and you need to observe it and you need to begin to approach it differently, to approach it in a respectful manner. So God is the one who makes things holy and God is the one who points out what is holy. So we see here that God is the one who makes something holy by being present there, by his presence. And God puts his presence into the weekly Sabbath. That's why it's holy. God is present in the holy days. That's why they are holy. They aren't holy just because they're periods of their time. God said, I'm present on this day, the seventh day. I'm present during the holy days. And those days are special to me. So if God has set aside something holy, let's see how we can relate to that. There's a statement that's made in the book of Amos, which helps us to better understand what's taking place by God's presence in the Sabbath day. Amos chapter 3, verse 3, you don't have to turn there, I'll just quote it to you. It says, can two walk together unless they be agreed? Can two walk together unless they be agreed? And it's as you look at that particular translation, which you find in the New King James and the King James Version of the Bible, it's a little bit misleading. The question is really, can two walk together unless they have an appointment? Can two walk together unless they have an appointment? So, in other words, they've agreed to meet at a certain place at a certain time. We live in an age, for example, we live in an age where we can get texts that reminds us of different appointments we might have. So, on August 21st, I have a dentist appointment, and I'm to be there at 8 o'clock. And I've received a text to that effect. And I know, close to that date, I will get another one reminding me of the appointment. And it's my I made the appointment, it's my job to be there. So, I plan on being there, and we've made an appointment to get together. So, as you think about the Sabbath, it means if one wants to be in God's presence in a special way, there is no other day. There's only one day of the week that God's going to be there. That's the day that he's made an appointment. So God has an appointment with his people to meet with him at a special time. So God said, this is the time. I'll be there. Will you be there? Are you going to keep your appointment? And it's different from other time, even as my appointment to go to the dentist is different from anybody else's. You may have a doctor's appointment. You may have you're going to an appointment with a chiropractor, whatever it may be. You have an appointment that's different than mine. And but we're to meet there at a certain time, a certain place. And unless you made that appointment and you agreed on it, you would not meet at that time, would you? So we make appointments and we seek to keep them. And it's the same way with God. He reveals a time that he wants to meet with you and me. So God said, this is the time, and I would like you to be there. I would like you to keep this appointment. If we choose to meet with him at a different time, you know, I can't make it Sabbath. I can't make it Saturday, but look, I'll be with you on Wednesday. Is that going to work? Wednesday's not holy. Wednesday's not holy, so that's not going to work. So God has set a time by which, by appointment, we are to meet with him. And we've all agreed when we were baptized that we understood the appointment and we would be there when that appointment took place. And like doctors are very unhappy with you when you don't keep the appointment. Well, God expects us to be there to keep that appointment. Let's look at something else that we find in Exodus chapter 31. Exodus chapter 31 adds a little bit more to the story of the Sabbath. Exodus chapter 31. And Exodus chapter 31 tells us who God's people are. It tells us who God's people are. In Exodus 31, we find a special covenant that God made with his people in regard to the Sabbath. And let's look at chapter 31, beginning in verse 13. It says, speak to the children of Israel. So when God laid this out in entering covenant with the nation of Israel, God was speaking to them. But God continues to speak to the nation of Israel in our time through this covenant. We are the Israel of God. We are spiritual Israel. We are not, maybe some of us may be physical Israelites, some of us not. That's irrelevant in the church age. We have been added to the body of Christ, added to Israel in a sense through being called and given God's Spirit. So God is speaking to us when he's speaking to Israel. So he says, surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. I am the Lord who sets you apart. So the Sabbath was made so that we would know God and that he would know us. So he set this time aside, and for those who keep it, it reminds us that who God is, and it reminds us that we are his people. Verse 14 says, you shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, it is holy to you. It is holy to you. In other words, it's been cut away from the other days, and God has put his presence in it. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. So that's a pretty serious statement, that anybody who profanes the Sabbath was put to death in ancient times, and that still applies. As you think about that fellow that's mentioned in the Pentateuch, that where he was out collecting sticks, and they caught him collecting sticks, and he was collecting the sticks in order to get a fire going for his business. So what happened to him? He's just collecting sticks, big deal. Well, he was openly defying God's command. And they said, what should we do with him? And Moses said, let me ask God. And he asked God, and God said, you need to put him to death. And they did. Now, when that guy comes up in the resurrection, you might think about, okay, that was the way it was then. Surely God's not going to put anybody to death for breaking the Sabbath. you may be surprised. So God, not that God's doing that now, but God reminds you this is serious business. This is holy and is something between God and his people. Let's go down to verse 17. It tells us that the Sabbath is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. It is a sign for the children of Israel forever, between God and his people. And we are his people, and it is a sign between God and all of us. It says, for in 6 days, and what are we going back to? We're going back to creation, going back to Genesis chapter 1 and 2. The Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. So God set aside the Sabbath, and it is a sign between God and all of his children that we are, that he is God and we are his people. So as you think about what we read here in Exodus chapter 31, have you ever thought about in what context this covenant arises? Well, it's found in the book of Exodus, as we know, but it is after chapter 20 where the commandments have been given. And so God proposes a special covenant that is put right in the midst of all of these instructions about building the tabernacle. And so what that means is that the tabernacle was important to the worship of God and it had its place, but honoring God on the Sabbath day took precedence over building the tabernacle. As they built the tabernacle, God gave them specific instructions and said, you need to be meticulous about this. And it was something very important to Israel's relationship to God. But he said, you need to build it, but don't build it on the Sabbath. You need to shut all of that work down and you need to rest. And God established this as in that very context, which is important for us. It tells us that the Sabbath is a sign. The Sabbath is a sign. And the word there that is used is the word for sign. It's not mark. As you think about a sign is voluntary. It is voluntary, whereas a mark is usually imposed on you. For instance, the mark of the beast, that's going to be imposed on people. You're either going to allow the sign to be put on you or whatever is going to be done with it, or you're going to suffer the consequences. Whereas the sign that God gives to us is voluntary. The mark is imposed. It is imposed like you're branded or something to that effect. So the Sabbath is a special sign. It is a special sign to God's people. And as you think about a sign, we have signs all over the place. We have them throughout the building. Keep the door open on the side of the hall. We have fire extinguishers inside that room. We have signs all about, exit signs. They tell us certain things. And the Sabbath does the same thing. The Sabbath is a sign and gives us direction. A sign can recognize certain occupations. For instance, if you go to the dentist, they've got a sign out front probably, and maybe on the door, and there's a sign that identifies the individual in that particular business. You see trucks going all over town, electricians and plumbers and all sorts of craftsmen who do different jobs, and they have signs on their trucks. And it tells you who they are, and it usually has a phone number saying, if you want this particular service, give me a call. A sign can also bring people together with shared interest and common purpose. Different organizations have signs. For instance, especially when you enter small towns, they'll usually have the different clubs they have in town, and they'll have them on the sign. And that way you can look at it, oh, you've got the Lions Club here or whatever it may be. So signs are used in different ways, and the Sabbath is a sign for all of us. And that's part of the way that the Sabbath is also used. The Sabbath serves as an external, visible bond that unites us and sanctifies us from everyone else. Here in the United States, almost everyone else who is religious doesn't meet on Saturday. They meet on Sunday. They meet on Sunday, or they don't do anything at all. And so if you keep the Sabbath, you are being cut away from, you're being separated from, you're being set apart by the very fact that you keep the Sabbath day. Think about your neighborhood. How many people from your neighborhood came to Sabbath services today? How many people went there? In my neighborhood, I think we're it, unless there's somebody that we don't know about. There's nobody that attends church here that we know about. So out of 300 houses, we're the only house where people go to Sabbath services. So you, by keeping the Sabbath, you're different. You're different. And it's God's intention that you be different. Not in the sense that you're superior to anyone, but because God is working out His purpose with you, and He never wants you to forget that purpose that He's working out with you and me. So, other people don't understand this, but there will be a day when they do. Now, everybody who's ever kept both Sunday and Saturday knows this. Sunday is sets apart almost no one, because those who do go to church do go on Sunday. And if they go on Sunday, does that set you apart from the rest of humanity? You're set apart from those who don't go at all, but the vast majority of people calling themselves Christians go on Saturday. But for those who are religious, it doesn't sanctify them. So, because as you think about the Baptists or the Catholics or other groups, they meet on Sunday, and it doesn't set them apart from other Sunday keepers. So when you keep the Sabbath, it immediately sets you apart. It sanctifies you, separates you from everybody else, and it is a reminder that God is calling you out and working with you in a special way to prepare you for eternal life. And God, as we well know, has made a tremendous investment in you and me. He's invested His Son. He's brought about the creation in order to work out His great purpose, and we're all part of that creation. And the Son of God makes it possible for us to eventually have eternal life. And the Sabbath is a means by which He protects His investment. He's invested in you and me. Christ coming and laying down His life was an investment so that we could have salvation. If the only reason God created the Sabbath was because we need rest, then guess what? He could have chosen any day. You guys need to take the day off. But that's not why He established it. It isn't just being a matter of rest, and rest is important. But that's not the only reason that He established. As we think of the Sabbath, it becomes the sign as we depending on how and why we keep it. So, how do you keep the Sabbath? I have to ask myself that question. How do I keep the Sabbath? And you have to ask yourself the same question, and why do you keep it? How and why do you keep it? That's what really allows it to be a sign, because you're going to be seen as different. And that's going to become, it will become more important, because this won't be the last sermon. We're going to continue to talk about the Sabbath from time to time and look at the subject and look at different issues about it. So the Sabbath is what God created to educate His people in His way. And that's what prepares them to be witnesses. We talked about in the last sermon that God has set us aside as witnesses. So when you keep the Sabbath, you are a witness. You're practicing God's way of life. And people do notice, why do you go to church on that day? Why is that? And, you know, for young people to go to school, when you're checking out and you're going to Sabbath services, it isn't a problem on Saturday. But when you're going to the feast, you are a witness. You're a witness because you're having to tell them, I won't be here for a week, so I won't be able to do those assignments. And then they start to give you grief. How can you leave? And we're not going to allow that. Well, it is a religious time. You're different. And I remember my son, when he went to the feast with us one year, he had just gotten into the accounting program, and so he went and talked to his teacher about getting out of it, getting out of his class and all of that, and he basically said, no, that's not happening. There is no religious time in the fall of the year. And he wasn't going to hear it. And so my son was going to fold, and I'll just have to go and take the penalty. And he went to talk to my daughter, and she said, no, don't take that. You need to get up there and talk to the department head. And so he did, and so the department head then talked to the professor, and so later on in the day, he's telling the other students in the accounting area, he said, yeah, I just got raked over the coals because I'm not giving this kid the opportunity to go to some religious occasion in the fall. So anyway, he was telling them that, and it actually went pretty well, and he actually had a good relationship with his professor, but it didn't start well. But he was different. And this teacher knew he was different. Nobody does this. You know, if you work at a company where they have a shutdown at a certain time of year, what do they expect you to do? They expect you to take that as vacation time. And then when you take that time off and then you come back into the office and say, well, you know, I got to take another week off for this particular religious convention. They're like, okay, hold it. You couldn't have done this when we had the shutdown? I couldn't because I don't schedule it. I don't schedule it. God does. But he expects me to be there. We've made an appointment, and he expects me to be there and be a part of it. As you think about, so God created this, and as you think about the Sabbath, God uses it as a day to educate you and me. A day to educate you and me. For instance, think about it this way as you consider what God does. Suppose you're on a basketball team, and that basketball coach tells you that come to the gym at such and such a time, we're going to have practice. All right? So you decide, well, I'm not going then. I'm not going on that night. I'm not going to be there with the other players. So think about that. How is that going to work out with your coach? He probably is going to be unhappy, and you may not be on the team. He expects you to be there for practice. I know when I was in sports that coaches were real persnickety about you being there at practice. So if you didn't show up for practice, they usually made you run laps or penalized you some way. So the thing is, this is a time, the Sabbath and the holy days are times that God has set aside primarily for the education of his people. We go to be educated. And as we're educated, then it helps us to be effective witnesses on God's behalf. And as you look at being coached, which God is doing, then, and as you look at anybody that's involved in sports, and they're on a particular team and they have a particular coach, usually a coach has a particular style. So they're teaching you certain things, teaching you how to play and play in a certain way, and you learn that. And when other people see you, I bet you went to this school or that school and you learned these things from this coach. I would say that if you go to Duke, you're probably going to have certain approaches to basketball that you learn from the coach there. He's coached for a long time. He probably has a set pattern, and he expects you to do it. And most of those guys that went through that program, they're probably going to coach in the same way that he did to a large extent. So as we come before our coach, our God, who is our coach, we learn certain things from him. And we learn to play the game of life as he instructs us, as he guides us and directs us. And as we honor him by keeping the Sabbath, it is a witness. It becomes a sign that other people will observe. Other people will observe. So the Sabbath exists to keep us in the proper frame of mind. It gives us the right materials that we need to make our way to the kingdom of God. But unfortunately, we live in a world that is not a Sabbath-oriented world. Is our world Sabbath-oriented? everybody, if they make it easy to keep the Sabbath. Everybody wants to keep the Sabbath. And everything in our society operates where it shuts down on Saturday, doesn't it? Now, they tried that with Sunday, the blue laws that used to exist in many states where everybody had to shut down on Saturday and you couldn't go to the mall and you couldn't go to the market and all of that. They established that as part of American society. That's all gone at this point for the most part. It's rare to find that. But our world is not a world that is in harmony with the Sabbath day. And there's lots of things going on that are easy to pull us away from the Sabbath. So if you're a sports fan, do they have sporting events on Saturday? All football games of national importance are on Friday before sunset, aren't they? No, they're all on Saturday. So if you've got some way to record it, you can record it. But the temptation is, well, I'm just going to take a peek. And, I only watched 15 minutes. I only watched one quarter. And, I only picked up that last quarter. But you got to ask yourself, should I be doing that? And you're going to have to determine that. And I can personally say that maybe I've not done so well with that because I like sports. And some days it's hard not to look. But anyway, I try not to look. And I shouldn't be looking because something is more important than sports. And I can read the newspaper later or look on my phone and I'll know then. So the Sabbath presents us with the opportunity to consider the whys of life, the right orientation so that we can properly conduct ourselves in the next 6 days. It allows us to get our priorities straight. What am I living for? What is important? The other 6 days, we live through them and we seek to honor God in the way that we live. And the Sabbath points us to the importance of that. The Sabbath is not just a one-day event. It isn't between 2 and 4 on Saturdays in Houston. The Sabbath is from sunset to sunset, and it points us to the way that we live during the rest of the week. Are you going to live by the principles that are tied in with the Sabbath the rest of the week? You look at people who are the smart people in our society, and many of them don't believe in God at all. In fact, if they believe that life is basically absurd, and we live, and then we die, and that's the end of it. There's no real purpose to life. But you see, by keeping the Sabbath, God reminds you there is every reason to live. And at the end of life, there is something coming. There is a rest coming. This life is not restful. It is not restful. There are times when it may be restful, but generally speaking, it's not. We have to work. We have to deal with the trials of life. We have to deal with all of the things that come with everyday life. And the older you get, it's harder to keep going. You're sore. You're tired. You have headaches. Things that never happened when you were 25. You're dealing with all of that. You can't remember anything. Now, I came into this room, and I obviously came in here for a reason, but I don't know why I'm in here. Let me think about this. So you retrace your mental steps, and then, okay, I know what I'm here for. So, or you get diverted really easily, and then you have no clue what you were in there for. You're on to something else. So that's hard. That's not the way God wants it to be, but that's a minor thing, but those are the things that we have to deal with. So God wants us to realize there's something bigger and better, and this life isn't a waste of time. There's a purpose being worked out, and the Sabbath emphasizes that purpose. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy chapter 5. We find something else that God tells us about the Sabbath day. Deuteronomy chapter 5, beginning in verse 12. Again, it's speaking of the Sabbath here in Deuteronomy 5 and the other commandments, and it mentions the fourth commandment, but it states it in a little bit different way. It says in Deuteronomy chapter 5, beginning in verse 12, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy. So we've already been over that material. As the Lord your God commanded you, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. So, reminder, it is God's Sabbath. In it you shall do no work, and tells you who is not to do any work. And there's something, there, you're not to work, and those who are your servants or your employees aren't to work. And then it says in verse 15, and remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. So the Sabbath is a weekly reminder that at one time you were in bondage. You were in bondage in a particular place. It wasn't a physical bondage, but you were in bondage to sin. And God has freed you and me. The Sabbath looks back to ancient Israel being in Egypt and being in bondage, and God said, I've freed you. And through Jesus Christ, we as Christians have been freed. We've been freed from bondage, and the Sabbath is a reminder that we've been freed. We are free to pursue God's way of life. And as you think about the Sabbath, and let's go back to Exodus chapter 16. It's interesting, as God brought Israel out of the land of Egypt, what was the first commandment that he revealed to them? What was the first commandment that he revealed to them? We find out about that in Exodus chapter 16. And for many of us, what was the first of the commandments that really began to have an impact on us? It was the Sabbath day. We began to realize that there was a Sabbath. We figured out that Sunday was not the Sabbath, and we figured out that the seventh day was, and that we actually knew which day was the seventh day. Oh, and that made a major change in our life. Some of us lost our jobs when we went in and said, well, I can't work Saturdays any longer. Could I be happy to come in on Sunday? And he says, stop talking. Don't come in at all. So go to the cashier and get your check or whatever. We'll mail you your check, and they're escorting you off the property. So we lost our job because of the Sabbath. And we would not compromise with that. But let's look at what it says in Exodus chapter 16, beginning in verse 4. It says, then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. So God is giving them manna, and he's going to give them a double portion on Friday, and they can go out and collect it. There will be plenty. They can go out and collect it, and this is all for the purpose of testing the people of Israel. It's a test. Let's go down to verse 22 of Exodus 16. And so it was on the sixth day that they gathered twice as much bread, 2 omers for each one, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. So they were to go out and they were to collect twice as much manna that day than they did the rest of the days of the week, because it was to last them through the Sabbath. Now, they'd already figured out that, you know what, if I get a double portion on Wednesday, by Thursday, that's not going to be doing so well. So, some people didn't heed God, and they loaded up. Man, we're going to load this stuff up, we'll have plenty, and if those guys don't get enough, we'll sell them some of ours. You know, people think, that's human thinking. And then it would just rot, and okay, that whole idea went down the drain. So he said, pick up twice as much on Friday so that you'll be ready for the Sabbath. Do twice as much so you'll be ready for the Sabbath. Because the Sabbath is a day of rest, and you're not to be out there picking up manna. So being the good human beings they are, they were immediately obedient, weren't they? No, you know, they looked out and they saw, here, there's these guys and those guys. They're all out there looking for manna, and there is no manna. Because God said there won't be. And they may have thought, why are we going to get twice as much? Because surely there will be manna tomorrow. And there wasn't. So they may have gone a little hungry on that Sabbath, and they didn't forget probably the next time. So the reason that they're to pick up that manna, as it says in verse 23, this is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake today and boil what you will boil and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning. So what's that telling you and me? It says the Sabbath is holy. The Sabbath is not just a regular day. It's not the day for shopping. It's not the day for doing the normal things that we do during the week. It is set apart, and we are to honor God on that day. And he said, gather what you need on Friday. So that means there has to be some preparation on Friday so you'll be ready. So you try to get your gas on Friday. You try to get your groceries on Friday, or make sure you're stocked up enough to where you don't run out. So now, if you're going to run out of gas on the way or to or from church, should you stop and get gas? Yes, you should. In that case, you may have forgotten things were rushed on Friday, but you try to do it on Friday. If you have people over to your house and you forget to get everything you need, oh man, we need sour cream for the baked potatoes. Okay, that's part of the menu here. I can run down and get some sour cream. You're probably going to be able to live with it, but there are things that happen and there is some leeway there, but you don't say, okay, I'm going to cook everything here on Saturday. No, you do what you can on Friday and do the minimum on the Sabbath day. So God revealed this to Israel and expected them to live by it. And it's instructive for you and me as well. One of the questions that came up in regard to the Sabbath, and it doesn't mention the Sabbath directly in the question that's asked, you had some elders mentioned in Ezekiel 20, and they came to Ezekiel and they wanted Ezekiel to go to God as a prophet and ask God why they're having all of the troubles that they're having. Why are we having all of the trouble that we're having? Why are we in captivity? And Ezekiel was already in captivity in Babylon, and they were coming to inquire of God, and what did God say? You're suffering because you are idolaters and you are breaking the Sabbath. That's your problem. That's why God is not blessing you. You are breaking the Sabbath and you are idolaters. And as you think about the subject of the Sabbath and idolatry, they're not separate from one another. For instance, if you know I'm to keep the Sabbath, but there's something that I want to do or think I need to do, and I put that before God, you've made that an idol. And it could include, I want to do this, and yeah, God said I'm supposed to keep the Sabbath and not put anything before God. If you do, you basically have become an idolater. And let's look at one other interesting passage in regard to the Sabbath as we come to a close. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. It says in verse 24, and let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. Nice scripture, but what does that have to do with what you're talking about? It says, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. That's what Christians are to be doing. Christians are to consider one another and do things that provoke others to love and good works. And he says in verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day appearing or approaching. So, as we look at the world in which we live, do we see the day approaching? As we look at the things that are happening in the United States, do they make us aware that the day is approaching? We see all sorts of calamities in the world, and there's one after another that we deal with in this world, and they seem to be increasing in intensity and occurring at shorter and shorter intervals. So the day is approaching. And it's a warning. The day is approaching, so you need to be ready for it. And he says in verse 26, he says, "For if we sin willfully after we have received the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sin." So as you look at the three verses that I've read so far, in what context are they given? In what context are they given? What commandment seems to most specifically be involved in these verses? What commandment is he pointing us to? On what day are we to assemble? Wednesdays? No, we know that it is the seventh day. And it's obviously telling us that there were people who were forsaking the assembling of themselves together for one reason or another. And he says, be careful about that. And though it's not directly stated, the implication is that it's important to attend services, because you can't, you know, people watch on the internet, and that's a wonderful tool. But who are you going to provoke to love and good works on the other side of the internet? Nobody, I don't know, you're there. And you're just watching us. But it's primarily talking about we in this room as members of the church are to provoke one another to love and good works. And you can't do it if you're not there. You can't do it. So it seems to be indicating that coming to Sabbath services is important. And it seems to indicate that that's a very serious thing not to do that. And as you think about that, it goes on to say there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins. And the reason is because sin becomes deliberate. Well, I'm not going. I'm too tired. I've got this going. And you have things that are more important than assembling together with God's people. And basically, as you do that, it is a rejection of Jesus Christ to willfully break the fourth commandment. He says, be here. And there are times when we miss. There are things that come up. There are things that happen. But God says, be there. So, in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 27, it says, what's coming is a fearful expectation of judgment and fiery indignation. So it is a serious thing. So why have the Sabbath? Why keep the Sabbath? The most basic answer of all is because we're human. And God has given us the Sabbath. And he tells us to remember the Sabbath was made for man. It was made for all of us, and not just us in this room, but it was made for all mankind. And eventually, the revelation about the Sabbath is going to be given to everyone. And it's going to be implemented worldwide. I don't think we can even imagine the whole world shutting down. No work. Nothing's going on. Oh, I don't think it could make it. How could we keep those power plants going? How could we do this or that? It's all going to keep working fine because you have somebody that's smarter than you and me in God. And God's going to make it work. And he's going to make it possible for everybody to take off on the Sabbath. I can't exactly tell you how that's going to happen, but I'm sure it will. The weather will be perfect. We'll never need heating or cooling. We'll have open windows and it'll be pleasant. Now, that's fine. That would be good, but we'll see how that works out. Also, God has a specific purpose that he's working out. He is using the Sabbath as a tool for you and me. And we need physical rest. I know when I was, for my wife and I, when the Sabbath comes, and you know that, okay, we're not going to have to work anymore, we have the day off here, it's easy to relax. And your body knows that, and it just kind of begins to shut down. And, oh, nice, I don't have to deal with anything today. And we need a reminder of God's spiritual creation. We need time to fellowship with God and his people. We need the time to be taught about God's way of life. We need time to think about God's way of life being applied and its great meaning. And we need time to evaluate, how are we doing? Are we progressing? Are we going backward? How are we doing? And we need to escape the social inequities of the world. We are given a rest. That's what the Sabbath means. And it's pointing to the ultimate rest, the time of restoration of all things. So there is no other commandment that so clearly identifies God's people. The Sabbath is an awesome blessing. It is an awesome gift to mankind. So I hope that you will take time to remember what a blessing it is, and remember that the Sabbath was made for man. It was made for you and me.